You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Data's Day, otherwise known as Miles' Marriage. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Colin from Warwickshire in England.
Colin from Warwickshire in England.
Yeah, jammed to say London because most people know where London is, but...
How far from
Warwickshire's a cool guy.
How far from London are you?
About 140 miles.
Oh, okay, 140 miles. That's cool. So how you been, Colin? What's up with you? Since we last talked, you have resumed something interesting. Why don't you tell them about it?
Yeah, I've restarted Trek News Reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically, I was getting a lot of emails and a lot of tweets about people asking me to bring it back. And it was fun. I did enjoy doing it. So I've got a British co-host and a co-host in New York City.
Mm.
New York State, sorry, not New York City. So we restarted it. Unfortunately, we restarted it and then I had 2 weeks off. So... we've restarted it and stopped it, but I've got to restart it again, so...
You're going to restart the restart?
We'll restart the restart, yeah.
Trek News and Views version 2.A, or 2.2 beta. Anyway, so, well, it's good to have you on, and the last time we had you was for family.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a while ago, eh?
Yes, and you wanted to come on for Data's Day. Was it because it wasn't very many available, or did you? Is there something about
no,
it you like?
I actually like character episodes.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of character about Data in this episode. We get to see his day. So
mm-hmm.
I actually like it from that point of view. The only downside of this episode is there's Keiko's in it.
Yeah.
Mm. But there you go. You can't have everything.
Well, yeah, I'm going to stun everybody in this episode sometime down the line. So, but it's good to have you on, so let's go ahead and roll into the show. The synopsis for tonight's episode is Data records a day in his life for the commander Bruce Maddox, including observation on Chief O'Brien's wedding and the mystery of a Vulcan ambassador who apparently dies in a transporter accident. And I'm thinking maybe this whole log should have been deleted, and we'll talk about why. This is the 11th episode of Season 4 of The Next Generation, first aired on January 7th, 1991. It was written by Harold Apter, A-P-T-E-R, directed by Robert Wiemer. Guest stars for tonight include Rosalind Chow as Keiko O'Brien, Colm Meaney as Miles O'Brien, Sierra Pekicher as T'Pel, and Alan Scarfe as Mendak, co-starring Shelley Desai as Vassal. I'm not even sure who Vassal is. April Grace is the unknown transporter technician, and of course, Manjel Barrett is the voice of the computer. So, what do we think about this episode here?
Well, I've already said what I think, so James should go.
Yeah, well, James, go ahead, James. He wants you to go first.
I think this is episode... Sorry, I think this episode is fantastic. I love every single part of it. I have come out as a Data lover. I have also come out as a Keiko lover, and I really enjoy this episode. It's very, you know, different, right? It's nice that they have this to punctuate the series. So I really like it.
You love Keiko?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with Keiko.
On the head
Keiko
on the way home or something?
No. There's nothing wrong with Keiko. Keiko is great.
Okay.
Everyone should have a Keiko in their life.
Dear God, no.
Everyone should have a Keiko. Okay, my turn. You guys are both right. Did you know, how is it possible that you could hate Keiko and love Keiko, but still both would be right? I must be a politician. No, I like this episode. I do like it. I love the whole point of view from Data's aspect, and I do like Keiko in this episode. For some reason, when they introduced Keiko, I thought she was a very charming girl. She was scared. She was had cold feet. She couldn't go through with it. And in the end, you know, she worked it out herself with him, with Miles. I thought she was very pretty in this episode. She's very fit. And I
what has that got to do with anything?
It doesn't matter. She's in good shape. I mean, she gets a little heavier as she gets onto DS9. But the point
she doesn't
very little. But maybe I'm wrong. I could even be wrong. Maybe that's something to take out of this show. But the point is, I thought she was pretty charming in this. I like her smile. I like the way she, you know, even though she doesn't quite like the food he's serving and she would rather have everything come from the bottom of the sea. It's in DS9 that I have a problem with Keiko. It's the, my, oh, I hate this place. That's the Keiko I hate. But in this Keiko, I thought she was very nice. So
TNG Keiko's okay, DS9, no.
There you go. That's the politician in me saying, yes, that is correct. You are both right.
So Lou, are you supporting a platform of Make Keiko Great Again?
Oh, gee, I don't know. How do we do that?
I think you should save that till when you review DS9.
Absolutely. When we get to Lower Pylon 2, we'll look into that, because as far as I can tell, the only time I really liked Keiko in DS9 is when she was possessed by the Paul Wraith. That was awesome, Keiko there. So,
yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, that was good. That was good.
So, hey, see, Doc,
it was a good episode.
We're turning them
around. It was a good episode.
We're turning them around a little bit by bit. Okay. So as I said, I sometimes like shows that are narrated from the main character's perspective, and Data, having it come from Data can be rather humorous at times, right? But what's this Father of the Bride stuff?
Hang on. Before we get on to that, can I just ask, I also like the fact that it's like a narrated, you know, the letter wraps the episode quite well, and we also don't see this episode from the command's perspective, but slightly, you know, step back from the command's perspective, which they revisit with things like Lower Decks later. And I think that kind of storytelling works on occasion. So I'm a big fan of that. But let me just throw a nitpick out there. Commander Maddox was prepared to cut Data apart because he was able to replicate him and learn about him. But now he's been reduced to asking about his social life. What part of cybernetics needs the research to include, I went out today, I had a sit down, you know, I played piano a bit. Surely Maddox shouldn't really need this letter.
Maddox shouldn't be receiving a letter for different reasons. But as far as his social interactions, I think it's perfectly normal. If he's attempting to replicate a Data without taking him apart, he's going to want to know what his social interactions would be potentially for the new version.
Yeah, you've got to give the Maddox android a personality.
But he was supposed to be so close. He was so close that he just needed a little bit more in order to do research. And the way they describe him here is that he's unaware that, you know, the Data interacts with people. I generally think that perhaps it's just showing that the Maddox character was really nowhere at all when he came over for Measure of a Man.
Oh, I thought it was nowhere.
He wants to know more about, not so much that does Dieter interact with people, but how Dieter interacts with people.
Okay, I mean, it's just a little nitpick on my side, but I'll accept that.
I mean, Dieter's lucky he never come in contact with Kirk, because as we know, Kirk just talked every computer to death.
Yeah. Would Kirk have actually made Data his second officer?
Well, this is one of the things with TNGs. They do this big thing about Data's the first sentient android. And we know from TOS that there was androids.
Yes, there were.
So, you know, Kirk probably wouldn't have had Data as an android on his breach, because, like I said, he probably would have just talked him to death. But you've also got the conflict that there was quite a few stories in TOS that had androids in. So, you know, they just conveniently forgot that.
Yeah, right. And how to paint an android. I don't know. I think had Data been normal skin tone, poor Brent having to go through that. But, okay, speaking of Data, what's with the father of the bride thing?
Well, I just took that as, obviously, they're in deep space and Keiko's dad's not available. So Data was like a substitute.
So Keiko's father couldn't join them? They couldn't wait till they can be with him later? Or maybe he's dead?
We never learn about anything to do with Keiko's parents. So, yeah, he could have been dead. He could have been too ill to travel. You know, the parents are never mentioned.
Okay.
Actually, did we not... Do we not hear about Keiko's parents? I thought that...
Not in TNG.
No, but on Deep Space Nine, I thought that they went back... I thought there were, like, casual references to them meeting the parents. I thought that even Kiriyoshi was supposed to be named after Keiko's dad. I seem to have these vague recollections.
Yeah, there's references in DS9, but in this episode, they make no references to Keiko's parents at all.
No, of course not, no.
So, you know, we can't draw on what comes after. Mm-hmm. In the timeline that hasn't happened yet.
Right, and I can't remember any of those anyway. I don't remember anything about her father.
I mean, I'm sure with hindsight, if Miles had known what Keiko was going to turn out like in DS9, he would have told Data he doesn't want to marry her.
So I guess the point is somebody had to walk her down the aisle. And
yeah,
why not be the guy who introduced them to each other?
Yeah, she does say that. She says, you introduced us to each other. You're important to both of us. Yeah. That he said, so.
Right. And that sounds like something Doc's going to remind me of next week. That they introduced he introduced them to her. So.
I'll take notes.
Actually, you should have looked up Japanese weddings, because if you're thinking about it now, there was no best man, no maid of honor.
There's
like
no best man at my wedding either. It's, you know.
No, but I wonder if it's a Japanese thing, because she obviously wear the Japanese dress and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mind you, Miles is always in the transport room on his own. He's probably got no mates.
Right. Yeah. Does Miles have any friends there?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we find out somewhere down the line here that, you know, he was at one time a tactical officer, and so, you know, what's he doing in the transporter now? To me, it seems like a downgrade. But there's a lot of things about Miles' past and his rank and everything. We could get into that another day, maybe next week.
Yeah, because he was in, and then he wasn't, and then he was, and then he wasn't in Starfleet.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so we could save that for next week and talk about it.
Yeah.
So Data visits Keiko, and that's where she announced that she wants to cancel the wedding, and she's sure that Miles will be fine with it. So, you know, Data, would you be happy to tell him? Oh, heck yeah. Let's just head on down to 10 for it. You know, that was awesome. I love that point when Keiko has made a decision designed to increase her happiness. She's canceled the wedding. Isn't that great?
Yeah, well, he starts by saying, I have some good news.
Good news.
Yeah, and then Geordi comes back at the end of it saying, I'll deliver the good news next time.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Yeah, maybe next time.
I think that, you know, this is still in the teaser, and it's very clear at this point what the tone of the episode is going to be throughout. So I think it's a good start. And I have to say, when I say I like this episode, you know, I appreciate it. It's a comedy episode. And you have to either be on board with that or not. And I am.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I loved it. Let's see here. One thing I noticed, and you know, I think this might be some good acting on Brent Spiner's part, but during the... did you guys notice that during the times of the monologue, when he was doing the voiceover, as he was talking to Commander Maddox, he was actually doing the facial gestures at the exact time he should be when we were, if we're talking to each other and we want to punctuate something? It seemed like his face was, you know, like, you know, I can't give you an example, but the point is, you know, he would make an expression. I don't know if you guys happen to notice that.
No, I didn't notice that.
Oh, no, I did. And it's extremely, very tightly scripted. So as Deidre is walking around, he has an internal monologue at that point. It's very much, I think, written from the perspective that this is going through his head rather than he's narrating something that... and they show you clips over the top.
Right.
So I hear what you're saying, Lou, and I did see that, and I think it's, you know, there's a bit where he later quotes a statistic, like, there's only a 17% chance that Picard would do that, and then Picard then does it, and he kind of goes, And so you get this interaction with the internal monologue and the actual kind of quote-unquote real world, and I think it's done very well.
So I was wondering maybe if they recorded all of his monologue at the beginning and then played it back during the scene that he actually reacts to, as if he was, you know, speaking it at that moment. So I think you're right. What we're hearing is his internal thoughts as the episode progresses. So that was pretty awesome there too.
Well, remember that Data has, well, Brent Spiner, I should say, has experience playing against himself and also against two versions of himself.
Yeah.
And I always feel that he's very good at the timing. And the fact that he's playing off against his internal monologue is just another example, I think, of him being very good at, you know, one almost might suggest that he's an actor, but he's very good at it. He does get
the he's a professional actor. Mm-hmm.
But he demonstrates that in Masks when he plays all the different characters.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he's very good at switching in and out of things.
Okay. Well, Doc, I know that you've already examined this next line, so I need you to tell me if this matches up or not. This is the 1,550th day since the Enterprise was commissioned. Does the math add up?
I didn't check. Come on.
Oh, goodness. Oh. I'm sorry, guys. We let you down. Doc. Okay. Well, then.
There is another interesting thing in that same monologue, though, is they reference the Hindu Festival of Lights,
mm-hmm.
which is a religious ceremony. And we are led to believe in TOS and stuff like that religion is no longer a factor in the future. But clearly it still is.
Still is, yes. Well, I don't recall ever seeing Santa Claus on the Enterprise, so... I would have liked to have seen that, you know, maybe Riker dressed up as Santa Claus, or Data, or Worf, you know. Anyway, but no, we don't really see much of that. So the other B storyline is the Vulcan ambassador who beams over, and for some reason, the captain and the first officer are not present for this. Since when?
Yeah, an ambassador.
An ambassador.
Ambassador, yeah. Who normally gets greeted by the captain.
Yeah. In dress uniform.
Yeah, I got that, yeah.
That's...
And she just beams over and walks out, basically.
But she's our ambassador, right? Rather than someone else's ambassador.
No, she's a Vulcan ambassador. She represents the Vulcan people to the Federation.
Oh, I thought she was a Federation ambassador.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, so she's not...
She's not specifically an ambassador for Vulcan.
Oh.
She's an ambassador for the Federation.
She just happens to be Vulcan.
She just happens to be Vulcan,
Okay. All right. She was there to negotiate this so-called treaty between the Federation and the Romulans.
Yeah, but, which she didn't find out that's what she was there for until the very end.
Right. But still, I would still think the captain should have greeted her.
Yeah, but that's the other thing and all, is he's telling the ship to go closer and closer to the neutral zone.
Right.
But at no point does he tell his first officer what's going on.
Okay.
Well, actually, is that true? Is it true that he doesn't know, or is it just the fact that this episode is seen from Data's perspective, so that we never see the scenes between the ambassador and Picard, or between Picard and Riker. We only see it through Data's eyes. And that's why I feel like it does have this flavor of things like Lower Decks. You're not, you know, they obviously have this tension building up as you're getting the Vulcan-Romulan story kind of like build up. And you don't know where it's going. And it's not necessarily because it's a mystery to everyone. It's just that this week, the way that the storytelling is, it's kept away from the viewer because we're seeing it through Data's eyes.
So with that idea in mind then, when she asks Data for the technical data on the Enterprise, do you think that he still told Picard?
No.
Yeah, I think no as well.
I don't think so, because she cancelled the request. It's like the request never happened.
Request.
It is a very unusual, and he even says, I have the same safeguards as the ship's computer.
Yeah.
But
and he's also like the second in command.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I noted that.
And he's head of operations.
Yeah, I made note that why didn't he... Okay, but another thing I was thinking of, it seems like even Riker didn't know what the mission was.
Yeah. Because when he tells the helm the coordinates,
mm-hmm.
Riker immediately turns his console around and then puts them into his console.
Right. So I think only Captain Picard knew what was really happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, I noted that Data not telling Picard. Obviously, if Data had told Picard, the story wouldn't have came out like it was. Because he would have been suspicious of her from the start and insisted that he go over with her, insisting that the Romulan come over here instead. So, but, hey, she was a well-known, well-loved, well-respected ambassador. So how long did she spend with the Federation?
Well, if she was a sleeper agent, it could have been decades.
Yeah. It's a long time to go without your own people. Okay. So, do either of your lunkhead's hair require trimming?
Oh, that was bad. That was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm attempting sarcasm, did he say, or something like that?
Yeah, friendly jibes and insults.
That's it, yes, friendly jibes and insults.
It was not meant as a serious insult.
Disparagement.
Disparagement. Yeah. I think it's good. And actually, I do need a haircut. I've let mine grow far too long.
Well, then you better get it done, you lunkhead.
Yeah, I do. I better. Yeah. Also, he...
Hey, I don't know what you both said, but I'm gonna change that because, you know, that amount of disrespect's not needed on this show. So you should get it done before you leave, Dr. Lunkhead.
Indeed.
Okay, better.
He also has the words with about the Romulan, sorry, about the Vulcan ambassador, where he kind of comments on the fact that Riker says, you know, oh, charming. And he goes, well, actually, he said charming, but in the way that he said, I suspect he didn't really mean that she was charming. Perhaps he even meant that she wasn't charming at all. And just the one thing I like about Data is the amount of verbosity that comes out. And, you know, it is what it is, and I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Although I wish he had actually given the right monologue while he was checking her out, the turbo lift.
Do you think like Data has like alternative monologues? Like, you know, so he could easily have like split personality.
You
so
bet.
This is professional Data.
Yeah.
This is, you know, Data in kind of a chat up mode or whatever it could be.
I bet you Data could take any woman and automatically figure out her bra size. He could look at anyone and just come up with that. Do you agree or not, Colin?
I should imagine so, but Vulcan's ambassadors tend to wear an awful lot of overlays.
Yeah.
So
I think he could figure it out still.
Yeah, probably. I just had this, when I was in the lift, I just had this thought that I bet they cracked up laughing at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's scrutinizing her, looking up and down, and she's just staring straight ahead.
Right. It'd have been funny if she'd look over at him like, what are you looking at?
Yeah.
Okay, so his hair does not require trimming, and I don't know, maybe I'm alone.
Yeah, and why does Geordi have his hair cut every week?
What was there to cut? I mean, you didn't see hair flying anywhere. It just looked like the barber, the pre-Mott, was just kind of like, you know, clipping, clip, clip, clip. Wasn't much to cut. He was just in here last week. Well, I guess he wants to get it right for the wedding. Even though it's been cancelled.
Yeah. But yeah, because it's the future, obviously your hairdresser's thing that you put around your neck is shiny.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you one thing.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Right.
No, it's like the towels are shiny as well, you know, and stuff like that.
Okay, this episode was done 25 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Don't say that. That makes me feel so old.
Oh.
Yeah, I was just thinking, yeah, cheers for that, Lou.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. What I never realized that the pig woman that was sitting next to Geordi in the next chair or something, that little stick there, I didn't realize that it was changing her hair color from gray to something else, more like a blonde or something. I never saw that once until I was reviewing for this episode.
But that was also kind of odd.
What?
Because he changed it to one color and then changed it to another color.
No, I think
what was he doing? Was he going to go back and forth until she's seen a color she liked?
No, I got the impression it's like when you do your hair coloring now, the first pass, it gets it to the slightly the color you want, and then each time you go around, it makes it a little darker and a little deeper.
You needed to apply multiple phases, right? You also wanted slightly graded, so you don't want it all a single block color.
That's
what I got. Okay, you two know way too much about hair dyeing, that's all I'm saying.
but Lou, I mean, how did you not notice this? Because Data becomes distracted and even turns around and looks at her.
I always thought he was just looking at her, like, ooh.
Well, like, whoa, you really are a pig woman.
Pig woman. When did we get the pig woman? But that wasn't in his internal monologue. But I'm just saying that I never noticed it. I never noticed the change in hair color.
She could have been like a teller, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Did we ever see any female tellerites?
Not in TOS, yes. No.
Yeah, I'm not too sure that we did. So she might have indeed been a female tellerite.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, so poor Worf. Just can't figure out what to replicate for a wedding gift.
Okay, why is there a couple in the background replicating a big teddy bear for their child? Do you have to go to a communal replicator bay in order to get toys?
It's the shopping channel, Doc.
Yeah.
But if you can replicate anything in your bedroom, what?
No,
maybe you can't.
Going down the shop.
No, it's like what it is. It's like, you know, you get the Argus catalogue and it's got so many items in, and the online website's got more. It's like that. In your room, you've got a list, but in that room, everything's there.
Hmm. So your bedroom is like, you know, what? It's a shorter menu.
Yeah.
I would say so. I don't know. Yeah, maybe they can't, you know. Especially, who are those people? I bet you, you know, the upper echelon get better replicators, but by the time you get down to Ensign Ricky, you know, he's probably got just his little replicator that probably gets him bread and water.
bread and water only from the red planter.
Yeah.
Dry bread at that.
Dry bread. Old bread. And it's
rule.
And it's a wheat bread or marble bread. He doesn't can't even get white bread. But okay, so Worf is looking at bing, 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 hold. He holds on two wine glasses. Or maybe they're just regular glass cups. But the problem was why would they need them? Why would Worf try to give them wine glasses? They want some wine. It comes with the glass out of the replicator, I assume.
The other thing I didn't get with that as well is they never actually stated a search parameter.
No.
So does that console just constantly cycle through every solitary gift available until you say stop?
Oh, I don't
very
know.
Long list.
I think it started with, you know, give me an idea, glassware, something of that nature, and he just happened to walk on him, and he's probably been there for 4 hours because the Klingon
I think Worf's been there for about 4 hours, and he's just managed to get out of the underwear section.
Just wait for it to cycle through.
Kapla!
Yeah, okay.
So the next item that he holds on was some kind of dove or some kind of holder.
Oh, look, yeah, it looked like the bird thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Yeah. Somehow, the selection of choice is supposed to be reflective of the person given it, and this does not remind me of you, Worf. What was that? Somebody dropped some glass?
Yeah, I dropped something on the table, but it wasn't glass. It was just a little pin.
Oh, okay. So if that dove doesn't remind Data of Worf, I guess could we try and figure out what could Worf give that would remind them of him?
See, I didn't get that sentence at all. I mean, I've been to quite a few weddings and I've never bought a present that reflects me.
No.
I've always bought a present that they wanted.
Right.
You know, it's not like what's what Worf going to do then? Give him a bat lift?
A torpedo?
Yeah.
Hold
a phaser set to kill, you know?
Yeah. Hold this for when Keiko's on Bajor. And then just pull this pin right here. Okay. I don't know what he would give. Like I say, a kaplooch or something.
Probably give him a jug of prune juice.
Right, there you go.
Yeah. And then I can pour it into them glasses that Data got him.
Mm-hmm. There you go. But we never did figure out what Data got him for their wedding. Or did we? Did we see that?
No. We never seen that now.
Okay. So do you guys agree that human bonding rituals involve a great deal of talking and dancing and crying? How much, Doc, how much was done at your wedding? How much, you know, a ratio of percentage of talking, dancing, and crying. How much was done at your wedding?
About 90-10-0, I think.
90% night talking.
Talking, yeah. Maybe 10% dancing. No crying. Not that I remember.
Me either. I don't remember any of that.
None of the guests cried.
None of the guests cried.
No.
None of the guests cried.
Why'd you cry?
Well,
some parents cry sometimes, don't they?
Oh, wow. And actually, by the way, this would have to be my second wedding. My first one, we didn't actually have anyone with us because we eloped. But that's probably a story for another day.
Where was your two witnesses? You have to have two witnesses by law.
Yeah, no, we dragged them in from the street.
Oh, okay. Would you go to Gretna Green?
What?
Did you go to Gretna Green?
Oh, no, because technically we're old enough. but we eloped in the sense that we just didn't tell anyone.
Hey.
So you weren't allowed to write the window job.
Hey, mate, come in here. I need you to do me a favor. You. And you. Come here, bloke. Come on in here. I need you to do me a favor. Just sign right here that says we're married. I didn't know. Okay.
Is it saying I go and get yourself a drink?
Oh, this is fascinating, Doc. All this time I've known you, I didn't know you were married twice.
Well, so we had a we got married legally, and then around 5 years later, we had a ceremony and also a church wedding to I suppose to formalize it because we had run off very young.
So you had a blessing wedding, basically.
Yeah, got it. Okay, that wasn't what I was thinking. I was thinking maybe
now, me and Lou thought you'd actually be married to two different
women. Yes, yes.
No, yeah. same lady.
Okay. Good.
Ah.
So Mrs. Dr. Roberts is the only one for you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad we cleared that up there. I was wondering who number one was.
I wish you could have came to Las Vegas. That's too bad.
So do I.
Well, then again, it'd be hard to put 7 kids on an airplane, international flight, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, we could just take up first class.
Sure. Yes. Well, actually, what we heard drop was Dr. Roberts' money drawer, and it is so full that it actually broke the drawer. So, all right.
That's for all his souvenirs he's going to buy.
Yeah. So,
oh, by the way, I am literally going over to Vegas with an empty suitcase.
Really?
Yeah. I am.
Because you can't.
Why not?
Because they weigh your suitcase out and they weigh it back, and if there's a difference, they query it.
How do you mean?
Your weight coming out and your weight coming back. Right. If there's a massive difference, they query it.
And they query it in the sense of, have you been buying Trek stuff from Las Vegas? And I'll say, yeah.
No, because honestly, American security is, you know, excuse my French, it's shit up.
Yeah.
And if they look at it and you come out with 40 kilograms and you're going back with 60 kilograms, they want to know what that 20 kilograms is.
What's it going to be? As if it's going to be like cocaine or anything.
Yeah.
It's going to be stuff you buy from Vegas.
I'm just saying, Doc, if they ask you to open your suitcase, make sure your underwear's clean.
Yeah. Wait, but that means he has to go to a laundromat.
Well, actually, having said that, I think we'll be okay because what I'll be taking back in souvenirs will be offset by the weight of crumpets I'll be bringing over.
Oh, good God, no. No.
Take him some muffins and all.
What are you going to do if I hate crumpets? God damn.
You can't hate crumpets, Lou. Well. It's a national convention you have to like crumpets.
You know, Doc, here's a question. I need you to do temple mechanics for me, okay? How could you have brought that up, but next week I'm going to try and remind you of that?
I have no idea.
Okay, let's think about that for a while. Oh, good Lord.
It's almost as if under this kind of like inertial frame of reference, time is going backwards.
It seems like it. It sure does. Mm. Yes.
I can't wait to hear the Star Trek Vegas stories from you two afterwards now.
Oh, you might have the opportunity to hear them live, or I don't know about live, but at least it depends on the Wi-Fi.
Because we're not coming... Well, yeah, not live, because we're not going to Colin's house and abducting him over the weekend. So
you'll be taking me to Vegas. You can abduct me if you're taking me to Vegas. I'm fine with that.
Okay, then we get.
I want to see Lou's face when he eats crumpets.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, that's an idea. Why don't you film that? Okay, guys,
there'll be a live crumpet tasting session.
Yes, the Battle Bridge crumpet tasting. Okay, guys, we talked about this in season one. Lou wanted to know about crumpets. Watch. Okay, yeah, we'll do that. Hopefully,
it was season two.
Yeah, was it season two? Huh? Hopefully,
it was elementary beer data.
Oh, that's it. Hopefully, you'll remember all this so we can record it. Okay, so let's deal with one thing: talking, dancing, and crime. Let's take the dancing thing.
The
dancing doctor. So Data walks up to her and says, could you teach me to dance? Now, there is a looming wedding. By all intents and purposes, it's going to happen. She's just got cold feet, jitters, a nervous reaction to an impending importance event, whatever. But the point is, so the doctor says, oh, you want to learn to dance? No problem. We'll get this little tap dancing session going, as if that has anything to do with the wedding. Do you think it's the reason why she can't save patients? She's not very intelligent.
See, she's not good at making connections with bits of data that are in her everyday life.
Yes. Oh, you want to learn to tap dance? No problem, without saying that.
Okay, here's the defense. Right at the top of the show, Data went through all of the events that were happening,
mm-hmm.
and he said, it's an average day.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there are just so many weddings that she didn't notice that it was that much of an issue.
There can't be loads of weddings. Captain Picard can't constantly be marrying people.
No, I wouldn't think so.
We can only have like 500 weddings, right, before you've run out of people.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, it depends on the crew, because the crew fluctuates between 800 and 1,000.
Yeah, and some are children. So,
yeah, and some are children. So, you know, you're probably talking an average of probably 300 weddings maximum.
Yeah.
Because I dare say some people on the ship are already married.
Yeah. And one hasn't even been born yet. One is on the way. But still, I part of me said, I know this is a nitpicky thing. Doc had his nitpicky thing. Here's mine. I know that, you know, I guess she might not have correlated the two, but at least if she said, what do you want to learn to dance for? For the wedding. Oh, okay, here we go. But without it, it wouldn't have been as fun watching them doing the all over the holodeck.
So what did you think about his double then?
His what?
His double.
There wasn't a double.
Where was the double? I'm going to pull that up.
There wasn't a double.
I'm pulling that.
Oh, that was actually Brent Spiner, was he?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was. Was it?
What are you talking about? I mean, I'm still here completely with 100% faith that it was Data, not Brent Spiner. Don't now tell me it's not even Data's actor, but his double. You're going to break me.
That is fascinating. I never thought to look. I mean, sometimes you can actually see Data's double very clearly.
Yeah. Well, the dance double was, you know, they shot it as much as they could without actually showing his face, but in some sense it was blatantly obvious. But the other thing with the dancing bit, apart from the fact that she, for some bizarre reason, thought he wanted to learn how to tap dance without checking what he wanted, but the other thing was that Data... Why couldn't Data just download dance routines?
Yeah. Right. Well, okay, so I'm watching as they're doing like the first step here, you know, clickety, clickety to the right, clickety to the right, click right. Stop, Data! But I think we got to get it probably into the whole big routine. No, I don't think that. I think that was Brent.
Okay.
Or at least it was Data. That much for sure. But what was the deal with that scary grin on his face when he was with the dance partner?
Well, that goes back to the humor, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That goes back to the humor.
I mean, that was just absolutely scary. Okay. So now we're going to start heading towards the neutral zone, which makes Data very nervous.
Which is an emotional response.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't have emotions.
No.
He does have emotions. In this episode, it's clear he has emotions. There's the bit where he even... you know, when he's talking to the Vulcan ambassador, and then he kind of makes a big statement about if I had a gut feeling, I would be worried about this. But then he's clearly worried about it, and the fact that he's even questioning this is clear that he has a gut feeling about this. So, of course, he has emotions. But actually, let me just go back. We didn't talk about the O'Brien scene, and would you like a pillow?
Or more comfortable chair to sit upon.
Oh, when he's in his room.
Yeah.
And he's trying to make him at ease. Do you want a drink? Do you want tea? Do you want coffee? Do you want a pillow? Do you want a more comfortable chair?
Yeah, that, maybe that some was music. Really
funny. Yeah.
Would you like a Percocet? Or a little volume?
Yeah, and all the way through it, O'Brien calls him sir.
Oh, sir.
But he's there as to see him as a friend. And, you know, surely Dan's off duty in his own quarters.
Yeah.
But he never calls him Data, he always calls him Sir.
Nobody could tell he was getting annoyed. You know, No, nothing. Please, shut up. I want to ask you a question. You know, you know her better than anyone. Could you talk to her? She's going off half-cocked.
Which was an interesting statement in itself, because surely if he's marrying her, he knows her better than Data.
You would think.
Yeah.
You would think. But, you know, let's talk next week again when, you know, we talk about their dinners together. What? No muffins or oatmeal or corned beef and egg? What? Your parents ate what? And she has no idea what he's eating or what he likes. It's almost like they just got married and then just went with it.
No crumpets either.
No crumpets. I can't wait for that. That's going to be funny. Crumpets. Okay, so let's see. Data, okay, so now we're heading to the neutral zone. But before we get to the neutral zone, we got Commander Riker hitting on Ensign Ponytail like crazy. Was he not absolutely into this woman?
Yeah, he's also sitting on the tactical console, so God knows how many weapons and torpedoes he's fired.
Right.
I would have liked to have Data just walked past him and said, sir, shouldn't you be at work?
Right. She was rather busty, but I'm sure that's what...
She's out of Babylon 5.
What does that mean?
She was a character, she played...
She was on Babylon 5, sorry.
She was on Babylon 5, yeah. She was a telepath on Babylon 5.
Ah.
But she's not here, but I guarantee you she knows exactly what Riker's thinking.
Yeah, because when he goes down and stands on the middle and he looks back at her,
yeah,
she gives him a wry smile. And that's when Data says, I wonder if that's why he's so popular with the crew.
Especially with women.
Especially with women, yeah. Because he basically hits on everyone with a pulse.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we got the dancing doctor. Data returns home and orders feline supplement number 74. I think that's the meow mix. Fish and salmon mix with some caviar sprinkles.
Yeah, for Cat Mart 1.
Now, is this the first appearance of Spot?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the first appearance of Spot, but it's also the first appearance of Spot Mark 1.
And it's the first appearance of feline supplement, which I love. The fact they kept that going. That's such a Datarism.
Feline supplement. Yeah.
And then also feline supplement 74, right?
Yes.
So it's 74.
Yeah, and in another episode he orders feline supplement 47.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I wonder what that is. That can't be Meow Mix. Meow Mix, yeah. Meow Mix.
And when he orders, because this cat was brain. And then the lighter spot is, I think it's a tabby.
Yeah, but you know why he changes colors, right?
Yeah, because it's all the feline supplements.
No, he took them down to the barber, and they use that little
the wand thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there you go.
The switching from boy to girl is just, you know, popping down to see Dr. Crusher, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
She thought
that's what he wanted, apart from tap dancing lessons.
Dude, you two probably aren't keeping up to date with what's going on over here, but there are so many transgender issues in play in this country. It's becoming insane. So maybe in the future that's exactly what Hot Spot was. He was just uncomfortable as a male cat and little snip and tuck. I don't know.
Maybe that's why the hair color changed in.
Could be.
Shock.
Yep.
The shock as a cat to wake up the following day realized it had the sniff.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes to lick something that's no longer there. Oh my God. What happened? No Spot. I didn't think you would look good as a boy. So Data then goes to the computer and taps out today's events when the cat jumps on his lap. Now, Data asks, the computer. What he asks the computer to do something interesting. Run fluidic sensor diagnostic. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Doc, you're not getting out of this one. I think you know.
No, it could be a fluidic sensor, or it could be a fluidic diagnostic of the sensor. I don't know. Maybe the idea of Geordi taking a whole load of oil and rubbing it over the sensor array is where we should head off for this one. But realistically, it's just tech word. I assume it was tech in the script.
Oh, I'll bet. Oh, okay, so maybe he was checking on the water pressure of the Enterprise. Who knows?
He was making sure that there was enough capacity to flush in the toilets.
Yes.
Well, he is head of operations.
He is the head of operation. You're right.
Yeah. So
and that includes all operations, no matter how personal.
No, personal. Yeah, he's also chief sewage officer.
Yeah. Right. There you go. CSO. So Brian, like you said, Brian comes in to beg Data to talk to Keiko and help change her mind. But, I think if Data had foresight and knew what kind of hell O'Brien was going to be put through later on in life, he really should have turned him down. No, I'm not going to do that. Believe me, you don't want to marry her.
Keiko's wonderful. It's wonderful that Keiko is around. And O'Brien becomes a better character that he marries her. O'Brien gets nothing but good stuff out of Keiko throughout the marriage. And the fact is that O'Brien really, really wanted to be with Keiko, so much so that when he was worried about the wedding, he ended up killing that ambassador, right?
Mm-hmm.
During that transporter accident. I don't want any bad things said about Keiko.
Hmm.
But they do say love is blind.
Okay. Well, there's really not much he can do to help her change her mind because she gets pissed and walks off. So it's time to get some help from the counselor of the ship, Deanna. Keiko.
Yeah, who says leave him alone?
Yeah, exactly. The best thing is you want to help them? Don't. Just leave them alone. Although there's one thing we get out of this. Go ahead.
Sorry, that's Troy's philosophy. That keeps a pretty empty calendar, a very empty, very empty work schedule. Just leave them alone. Yeah. They'll sort themselves out.
That's the best way to help them. Just, leave them alone. But we did get one very important piece of information out of the counseling session that Data has thought about getting married because he has a lot to offer a potential mate. Now, he didn't say he has a lot to offer a woman. He doesn't have a lot to offer an android. He has a lot to offer a potential mate.
Well, I think that was just he wasn't being gender or species specific.
Right. So Data's not gay?
Data's gay. I'm sure Data can be gay.
He took me anything.
I mean, he's programming, a variety
of techniques.
Multiple techniques. I'm sure somewhere in there there's something to satisfy anyone. But this is a fun episode, right? And it's a lot of silliness going on. But I also think that, I think, Colin, you mentioned at the beginning, there's a lot of character moments for Data. And, hearing Data mention, how he wants to get married and how he's thought about things, in addition to his general commentary on the day, I think it all adds up to a really good a really good day in the life of episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about whether they could have done this with anyone else, whether or not you would have wanted, Dr. Crusher narrating the day.
No.
And I just don't think there wouldn't be enough there to make it interesting.
No, the premise wouldn't work with anyone else,
except for maybe Riker. Now, I'd actually love to be a fly on the wall.
If Riker narrated his day, this would be the first episode of Star Trek that had an 18 certificate.
Had a what?
18 certificate. Be adult only.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I had no idea what you were, 18 certificate. Sounds what you're saying. I have no. Oh, sticker. I have no idea.
Certificate.
Oh. 18th certificate.
It's the equivalent of like an NC-17 rated.
Oh, okay. So it'd be rated R here.
No, it'd be higher than R.
Oh, X. That's what I'm saying. It would have been very interesting to see Riker's day.
On the porn channel.
Yes. Yes. The sponsor would be Penthouse. Okay. So the ship has arrived into the neutral zone, and it's going to meet up with the Romulan warbird, and the ambassador wants to beam over to begin negotiations by herself. No support. Don't bring him over here. I'm going over there. Just shut the hell up. And she gives him that shut the hell up look.
She did actually do that. She just gave him a death glare.
Yep. Now, isn't it standard procedure when somebody comes on the ship to get a physical?
Well, she's an ambassador, so she might be exempt.
And no one has ever done a physical of her entire time to detect that maybe she might be a Romulan?
Well, the transporter has a biofilter.
Uh-huh. But it doesn't report. So, it just transports the matter. It doesn't care what it is.
Yeah, but at a certain point, right, you do have a record. If you can transport someone, you have a pretty sophisticated record of what that person's made up of.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's like saying, well, we transported them. We have no idea how much they weighed or how tall they were. I mean, you must have that information somewhere. But you have to look past that, because otherwise, anyone that's kind of hiding, anyone that's undercover, you would never allow them to use transporters or possibly even go into a place that had a sensor, you know, a sensor net.
It would also explain why she's posing as a Vulcan, because Romulans and Vulcans have a shared heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the DNA might not be massively different, that a transporter would flag it up.
Yeah, okay, but then when the Romulan's dying in sickbay and nobody can possibly give blood, none of the Vulcans could possibly give blood, the only one who can is the Klingon. I mean, it seems like they're different. While they split off from each other, and evolution has changed them in some way, it seems.
The thing is that there really hasn't been enough time for the, you know, for the Romulans and the Vulcans to be different, right? It wasn't.
Well, they got the head ridges. They got the brow ridges.
Did they do as they? Well, I mean, some of them do. I mean, not originally, and also not 09 for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, that bugged me. That really bugged me. Why?
Well, the Klingons in 09 are different as well. So,
but there's a difference between Well, actually, the Klingons weren't there at all. But I do know that they did have people previously there. But
deleted scenes.
Yeah, I can accept the parallel universe stuff being different, but I can't accept the prime universe being different. I'm sure that makes me a weirdo, but as soon as they come back, I'm happy to say, oh, you know, butterfly effect, everything was different. You know, it was a heat wave on Vulcan one.
Okay. And, from a scientific viewpoint, then, every human on the planet has evolved from the same core species.
Mm-hmm.
So would there be difference? I mean, this is, you know, because I literally do not know. On a DNA level, would there be a DNA difference between someone in, say, Siberia to someone in Argentina?
You can find genetic markers, yes, that would be different. But then also remember that we're very similar to like the potato from a genetic perspective as well.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
So I don't know. Maybe everyone's so similar when we share like 95% of our makeup with a monkey that, you know, maybe you have to just let these things fly.
But the other thing is, the flip side of this as well is we also see episodes where, you know, down the line where Deanna poses as a Romulan, and she's Bantazoid.
Yeah.
you know, and then there's Riker poses as various aliens throughout the series, and so on and so forth. So, you know, they never get picked up.
The thing that the biggest problem I always have with that, especially when you have like Troy as a Romulan, or you know, or when Riker is kind of going on first contact missions, it's never that, you know, how do you make yourself look and fit in, but it's always the kind of the cultural stuff that I always get a bit surprised by, because it's like I would imagine that Troy would have gone dressed up as a Romulan, you know, scratched her arm in a way that is absolutely unacceptable for the Romulans. I think that there must be cultural differences that must really show yourself as
being. Yeah, I mean, a simple example in modern society now is a cup of tea. You know, the British drink the tea in one way, the Russians drink it in a different way.
And Americans don't drink it at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, if an American came over and you said, offer them a cup of tea, they said, oh, no thanks, we would be on to you in seconds. You'll be taken to the Tower of London and you know, and strung up.
Right.
Okay. But still.
Got it. Okay. Well, as you stated, O'Brien kills the ambassador in transport, supposedly. There's, you know, not enough to do an autopsy. I imagine.
Yeah, see, the whole transport thing, basically, you know, we know that they beamed her off the Enterprise's pad and beamed the residue onto the pad.
Yes.
That's what gets revealed. But the whole thing of that doesn't add up, because, you know, why wasn't it picked up that there was a second beam in operation?
Yeah, how could they not know that? That's a good point there, too. Okay, so, and as you said, Data finds... Oh, good Lord.
Are those your dogs, Lou? Or is that Colin?
No, that's...
No, I have got a dog.
Don't worry, I know.
There's no animals in these house.
You're just the one on the computer.
Yeah.
Okay, well... I'm trying to. My daughter's friends are out there, and she's still sleeping. So, Lord.
We'll plow on.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll deal with it. Data finds out that the Romulan
release the hounds.
I can't.
Let them eat those children.
Oh, that I would do, but no, I'd get in trouble for that. But then again, they're chihuahuas, so they can't really do much damage. Thank you. So Data finds out that the Romulans beamed her off their transporter while simultaneously leaving a little DNA in her spot. But why? So everyone assumes that she was just kidnapped.
Yeah, that's a logical assumption. Because as far as I'm concerned, she's a Vulcan ambassador.
Yes.
So she would be a high-value prisoner.
Absolutely. Guys, can I just take 1 minute to tell them to leave? She's sleeping.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, hold on. Looks like they're getting the hint themselves.
She must be a heavy sleeper.
Yes, she is.
There you go.
Yeah, well, she, since it's summer, she actually sleeps during the day and stays up all night and plays on the computer.
Oh, because of the heat?
Yeah, probably. Okay, so...
Because of the heat.
Because of the heat. Age. Yeah, because of the age. That's what an American teenager does. Are you guys familiar with this Pokemon Go thing?
Well, it's kind of hard not to be.
One at a time. Say that again.
It's kind of hard not to be at the moment.
Okay.
It's all over the news and everything, so...
Yes. So the side effect of that is that children are actually walking out of the house and getting exercise. She hasn't gotten into it yet. That's the only thing that would get her out of the house, probably. But anyway. Doc, do you want to say something before we go on?
No, all good.
Okay. So, time to report to the captain that they actually abducted the ambassador, and we're just going to go ahead and warp back and meet up with them. But surprise, surprise, we find out that she is not a Vulcan ambassador. She's in fact a Romulan spy. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, now this brings up a question that I wanted to ask you, Luke. Mm. That saying he said, sometimes you get the bear, sometimes the bear gets you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an American thing?
I've never heard that until Riker.
Oh, okay.
I've never heard that, but I use it now.
I've never heard it.
Hmm? Yeah, I know.
So there are probably more bears.
In Nebraska.
Well, I don't think there were very many bears in Nebraska, but no, but I use it now.
I'd never heard it until I've seen it in this episode.
Right.
Many moons ago, and I just wondered what it meant.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you know, some days you win, some days you lose. That's obvious what he means, but remember I said at the beginning that this whole log should have been erased?
Yeah.
Here we go. Data actually continues in his log, or in his letter to Maddox, about the situation and an appraisal of a man and what he's going to do. You know, will he fold or will he call his bluff or whatever the case is? And I was thinking, this is now becoming information that Maddox probably should not have any access to at all.
No, because it's personal.
Well, it's a personal log, but it's stating, you know, secret information. It's talking about secret things.
Oh, yeah.
So the
because it's classified, yeah.
It's all classified. So the whole thing about the ambassador should have killed the entire letter to begin with.
Well, I've just found out, sometimes you get the bear, sometimes the bear gets you. It's from the Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah?
It's not from the Big Lebowski.
I've just looked it up.
What is that?
But this is before the Big Lebowski, right?
Well, that's what it's saying on the website.
I mean, was there a book that was based on? I thought Big Lebowski was like in the mid to late 90s.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I don't even know what it is. The Big Lebowski?
You're
right. No, it's a 1998 comedy. So it can't be from there unless they went back in time and used it.
Unless it's a book.
Not a clue. Yeah, 1998 is when it says. Okay. But sometimes the bear gets you, you know. I'm not sure if I ever really get the bear too often.
I don't want to get the bear.
I don't want the bear. Sometimes I have to grin and bear it, but...
Now, can I bring up another nitpick? I'm going to just... probably my final nitpick, which is that when Picard has killed the ambassador, or feels that the ambassador's being killed through an accident,
mm-hmm.
and he has to take the commander's or the admiral's call, why does he take the call on the bridge? Because he has to be diplomatic. It's going to have to be, he's going to have to break very bad news. There might be issues and there might be, you might have to discuss stuff that you wouldn't want to discuss in front of the crew. But he doesn't take it in the ready room. He takes it on the view screen. And I think that had it been a one-to-one call in kind of the real world, Picard probably would have stood a better chance at convincing him that it was a mistake or an accident rather than a, you know, well played, Picard, well played kind of deceit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he even says, like, you played it like a Romulan.
Right. But you better leave now. Which they do leave for a while until they figure out what happens.
But the Romulans don't. That's the other thing. They leave, the Romulans don't. But the Romulans are still in the neutral zone as well.
Yeah. And they don't cloak either.
No.
But doesn't that fit Romulan arrogance?
To an extent, yes. And actually, the thing I have in this episode is that the Romulans are behaving in exactly the way that the Romulans would behave.
Yes.
They're very Romulan
yes.
in this episode. And actually, you know, spoilers, but I love the fact that they win. Because I think you could have very easily had an episode that finished with them, you know, getting their comeuppance. Or, you know, something happened so that they didn't manage to get away scot-free.
Ah.
But I enjoy the fact that the Romulans win. And indeed, you know, someday the bear gets you.
But that would have sucked if, you know, a newborn baby had about 2 hours of life before the Romulans destroyed the ship. That'd been sad. But Data goes to apologize to Keiko and informs that she informed him that she wasn't offended. In fact, you need to get ready for the wedding. Huh? Poor Miles. He just doesn't know what's coming. He doesn't know what's coming on.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yep. And they played Isn't It Romantic? How sweet. During the wedding. Okay. Well, I think we've pretty much covered except for one of the most touching moments in Star Trek.
What's that?
I thought the baby scene was the cutest little thing.
You know. Yeah, that was an interesting scene because Picard says he's not comfortable with children on numerous occasions.
Right.
And yet here he is being completely comfortable with a newborn baby.
Yeah, well, a newborn baby isn't talking back and playing singing Frère Jacques with him or sitting on a turbo lift, you know. But you're right. I think it was touching because obviously the situation they were in, they were facing their destruction at the same time this small miracle was taking place. I thought it was so cute. And when he says, welcome aboard, it just, I mean, when you guys first saw that, did you not get kind of a chill when he looks down and says, welcome aboard?
No.
No. Oh, okay. Neither did I.
I'm not, did you, Doc?
Not really, but maybe I'm just not a softy anymore. I don't know. But also, I think there's a difference between being comfortable with newborns and being comfortable with, like, you know, children that can talk back and can run around. I think a lot of people are good with, you know, babies, but less good with a. There's a certain point around perhaps 8 or so where they start to smell, and at that from that point onwards, maybe he's just not comfortable.
Yeah. And then when she's 14 and you wonder, why didn't you just eat her when you had a chance? Yeah, I got it. Don't let my daughter know I said that, by the way. Okay, so the letter ends with Data describing what he believes is being human is all about. And how he's at least going to try to become more than what he is now. Okay, I chopped that up, but that was the end of the letter.
I think you put a kiss on the bottom.
Put a what on a what?
That's it. I think you put a kiss on the bottom.
Oh. But at least he didn't say, computer, delete entire letter. That comes later.
Yeah, that's for lower pylon 2.
Yes, we'll talk about that in lower pylon 2. And, you know, how come the Federation couldn't, you know, retrieve what was written anyway, even though he erased it? You know, it's happening to Hillary Clinton. I mean, her emails were recovered even though they were erased. So maybe...
And I'm sure they could recover it, but the fact that they would be going out of their way to recover everything that was deleted from by anyone under any circumstances is a bit paranoid.
Right, but...
You want to buy Dyson or Hillary?
Both. But... But I'm sure Section 31 could possibly get into something, but we just don't know who they are yet.
Section 31's probably already got it.
Yes. Yeah, they already know about it.
Okay. Anyway, wasn't it nice that this episode got topped and tailed with the night shift?
So yes, I did like that.
He picks up at the beginning, and then he kind of hands over at the end.
Oh, yeah, right.
So when he says begin night shift, did the lights dim on the whole ship?
No, I'm sure just a bridge.
So you're walking down the corridor and it goes dim. Oh, better get to bed. curfew starting.
Curfew starting. Yeah. Well, that makes you wonder, you know, does the environmental controls change in any way? The night shift likes it a little warmer than the day shift. Begin night shift.
But in that case, then it doesn't make any sense dimming the lights for begin night shift because they're on duty, so they need the lights on.
I was about to say, you wouldn't make it hotter, Lou. You'd make it colder. So everyone on night shift would have been a woolly jumper and maybe a hat, just so that, you know, it's true to life.
Maybe, but why would you need the lights on when all the control displays are all lit?
In that case, then, why do you need lights on at all?
There you go. And until 2.5 months ago, every day when I was at work, I had the lights off. Because I had monitors that lit up the room, and I didn't need the overhead lights. The reflection of the light was digging into the monitor, and I didn't like it. So the fluorescent, you could see the fluorescent in the monitor. So I shut the lights off. Okay. Oh, God, I had to talk about that place again, didn't I? So I guess this is, brings us to the end, unless there's anything that we've missed.
No, I think we covered everything.
Okay. Well, then our final thoughts and ratings on this... Okay, so it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. It's an interesting story. I do like the perspective of Data. I'm glad O'Brien is starting a family, but later I'm going to regret saying that. I did like Keiko. I thought she was cute. I thought she was very charming in this one. It just gets worse. And then we get little Molly. Anyway, that comes later. Had Data been just a little bit more curious about the Vulcan, otherwise known as the Romulan spy, the whole thing wouldn't have been successful. How he didn't figure he needed to inform Picard, that doesn't make any sense. It's an oversight, I think. But had they done that, the story would have changed. I love the inner monologue, Data telling about his life aboard the ship and what his normal day is like. I doubt that all of these are everyday occurrences, but still. The touching scene at the end, whether you guys saw it or not, I thought it was breathtaking in a sense. Just welcome aboard. Every time you hear welcome aboard to something, it's kind of cute. In the end, it's a great episode. It's not a perfect 5, I don't think. But I want to give this Data's Day a 4. Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I like this episode, like I said at the start, because we do get a lot of character insights. We get to see Data from a different side. We get introduced to Keiko. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is, you know, neither here nor there. We get to see a bit more of Miles and his frantic pursuit of his bride-to-be. It's also nice that it's not an episode not revolving about Picard and Riker. And I also like the fact that, like James says, at the end, the Romulans win. You know, and just to make sure they win, they bring 3 more warbirds across the neutral zone, just in case you haven't got the hint that you're already outgunned 2-1, we'll bring 3 more in.
Right.
So.
Oh, we didn't say as I mentioned that, did we? Yeah.
Yeah, but so I did like that. Yeah, I would give it a 4, yeah. I'd agree, I'd give it a 4, for sure.
Okay.
What about you, James?
Okay, nonsense, the both of you. This episode's a 5 out of 5. I have no problem giving this full marks. I love this episode. It's not, you know, it's not a big standout episode of Star Trek. It's a character study of effectively my favorite character on the show. I think it's well written. I think it's well performed. I think that the sub stories, the beast plot that they have with the Romulans. Builds tension very well. You're kept out of the command process and you don't see any of the scenes with Picard, for example, in it. So you don't know what's going on, and that kind of keeps the tension built up. I do think there are parallels with Lower Decks, and I think that episode is also great. I love the fact that Romulans are being Romulan. I love the fact that Data's being Data. I'm not selling it here. This is as bad as whenever I say that I like this episode. It was very Star Trek-y. But I hope that people do know what I mean. I really enjoy this episode. It's good that the Romulans win at the end. And I think this episode is very memorable in what it tries to achieve and what it tries to display on screen. And, you know, you don't want to have an episode like this every week, but for what it is, which is a, you know, unique view of Data in all his innocence and as he sees the world, I think it's a great show. While I was watching this, I actually realized that there's a part where Data mentions about Sherlock Holmes and how, you know, he admires Sherlock Holmes for the analytical way that he approached problems. I actually realized that I think I admire Data for exactly the same reasons that Data admires Sherlock Holmes. I like the way that he goes about his life. And I think, to a certain extent, this is very much the, this is a day in the life of Data. And if you are connected to that character, I think yes. There's nothing short of 5 stars that I can hand over for this show today.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all.
Okay. Then that brings us to the end. Colin, we have you on again for Night Terrors.
Yeah.
That's another excellent episode.
Are you being sarcastic there? That's a great episode.
That's what I'm saying. That is a terrific episode.
But Colin's sitting there going, ha, ha, ha.
I thought he was being sarcastic, that's why.
Oh, no. That's another.
That's why he said it. That's another great episode.
That is another great episode. Yeah. That is another
great.
That is another.
I think he gets slated. It does get slated.
Yeah, it does. It gets whipped to pieces a lot.
Yeah. And I don't understand why. I mean, just because Troy is sitting there in a harness floating through space and saying, so what's she saying? She's talking about Watson. Who are you?
Who are you? Where are you?
Oh, and it's got the morgue scene in it.
Anyway, we'll save that for when we do it.
Oh, yeah. Wait a second. Oh.
Lou's going to realize he's been thinking about a different episode.
Lou just realized that, yes. I'm thinking of the one where Wrecker does the play and the play comes out to be real life and just
frame of mind.
That's the one I was thinking
2
of.
2 years from now.
Okay. So, yeah. So let's see here. Night Terrors. Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, that sarcastic great may have actually been more accurate after all. It's okay. Oh, anyway, Colin, we'll see you then. So, thanks for coming on.
A Federation starship on a merciless attack.
You have killed nearly 700 people.
A Starfleet renegade on the brink of madness.
We had to act now.
Picard must destroy his fellow officer and stop a war.
You must preserve the peace, no matter what the cost.
He turns weapons on a Federation starship to protect the enemy?
Starfleet Showdown on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
So join us next week, everyone, as we review Season 12 of...
Bloopers!
Make that Episode 12 of Season 4. And that will be The Wounded. And we will have Sean from The Rusted Robot on. So everybody take care and good night.
See ya.
Say good night, everyone.